Words are about to be spoken on the extreme life of Matt Hardy. We are broadcasting from the Blue Chew Studios. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code Hardy at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. I, of course, am John Alba, joined every single week here by the man of the hour, one half of the greatest tag team to ever walk the universe, Mr. Matt Hardy. How are you, my friend? We finally wrapped up Becoming Broken, and now we're moving on.
We are. We're moving on. That was a lot of fun, though. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I got so much positive and really constructive feedback, too, and I think everyone that listened to it did. So thank you guys so much for checking that out and tuning into the Becoming Broken series.
How did it feel listening back to the episode and once again reliving that moment walking down that aisle at WrestleMania?
I mean, amazing. It's one of those moments that there. I feel like you're very lucky if you get a moment that every time you talk about it, it gives you goosebumps.
Yeah.
And that WrestleMania 33 return is truly one of those moments. I mean, every time it comes up, I just, my mind goes back to that place and that vibe and just, and it was just such a surreal scenario. And just to come out in front of that sea of humanity, they're chanting delete, delete, delete and going nuts. And you guys had established this other persona somewhere else and it crossed universes to go to WWE, you know, at the showcase of the Immortals, WrestleMania. So it was truly a magnificent moment in our careers.
I was just so glad that everyone picked up on the don't let them do anything fucking stupid story. That story was all over the internet. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And very much encompassing of Jeff Hardy.
So, I am my brother's handler.
And everyone said your Vince impression was great, which I didn't know you had a Vince impression.
It was kind of like just a half-assed Vince impression, too.
It's cadence. That's what it's all about. But we got a lot of great stories like that. If you go through our archives here on the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, some of my favorite stories with Michael Hayes, and there's so many more that you guys can go check out in the archive, wherever you get your podcasts, and dropping early ad-free on adfreeshows.com. And Matt, if they want to help support the podcast, what can they do for us wherever they listen to them?
They can give another one. Not a two, not a three, not a four, but a five-star review. Five-star review. Five fingers, five stars. Give us five stars on every single episode. And whatever you like in it, compliment us, damn it. We work hard for you.
Send it to us at Matt Hardy Pod on Twitter. A screenshot. You'll be entered to win a little prize as Matt and I are going to begin that stuff together shortly for you
soon. Maybe you could hit the jackpot.
Maybe you could. Well, Matt, we've got a very cool episode this week. It is WrestleMania 2000. This is pretty much the predecessor of the TLC match, as we would learn to love. And we have a special guest joining us on this week's podcast. Who are we going to be hearing from?
We are going to be hearing from the one and only Christian Cage, my lifelong frenemy. We've either been best friends or we've been bitter enemies. At every stage of the game, we have been frenemies, I guess. So Christian Cage, and I think he is one of the most underrated talents and minds to ever grace a pro wrestling ring. He's going to be joining us for a watch along of the WrestleMania 2000 Triangle Ladder Match. Yes. And I'm excited about that.
Our first ever watch along here on the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. I'll give you guys all the time codes if you want to pull up your Peacock, or we'll also have it in the video version as
smart.
Well. So that way we'll make sure that everybody, because you know, you're getting all those royalties from Peacock. So I just want to make sure that everyone could send those clicks and get you that extra side cash there. So
your sarcasm is top notch this morning.
So Matt, busy week for you, a tables match last week.
Yeah.
How you feeling? It was a little bit of a controversial tables match, but you guys ended up coming away with the win. Hardy Boys standing tall at the end of yet another tables match.
Yeah, it was controversial because of social media. The reason there was a controversy behind this tables match was mainly because of social media. As I've said in the past, the best thing about social media is that it gives everyone a voice. The worst thing about social media is that it gives everyone a voice. You know, and sometimes there's just people that comment on things and they just make things overly difficult. And I'll take responsibility for it, even though technically I don't think it's my fault. I'll take the heat, you know, because apparently we had spoke to the person who was like our producer and the people in the truck, and they were down with the rules and they understood basically to win a tag team tables match in AEW, much like the Royal Rumble 2000 match, both members of a team have to be put through tables in an offensive manner by members of the other team. And that's how you win the match. apparently we had given this to the powers that be, but it didn't get transitioned over to the commentators. So they weren't totally crystal clear on it.
It's not relayed to them.
They were kind of making it up on the fly as it went along. So I wish I would have just went and talked to Tony Schiavone, JR, and whoever else during the day of and cleared it up. So I'll take the heat for that. If you guys want to give someone the heat for it, you want to get mad at somebody, get mad at me. I like it. Everybody on the internet's mad at me anyway, so it's all good. But I enjoyed the tables match, and I thought it was really good. I thought it was really strong. Butcher and Blade, I know they were both extremely nervous about this thing, as ironic as that may seem. But it was great to have that match with them, and I thought it was a good environment. There was so much carnage and destruction, and that's what we promised in that match, and I was so happy we got that. And I felt like it was a very fitting revenge after both Butcher and Blade turned on me, and they beat me up viciously whenever they kicked me out of my own group that I started myself, the HFO.
They're a talented tag team. I like them a lot. I got to work a little bit with them on the independent scene, and they're just very unique, especially the freaking Butcher. What a look he has. Incredible. He's a real-life rock star. It's like very cool, their package. So I'm sure that was a cool experience for them to work with you guys.
And, you know, it's funny. There was a few people that asked me, like, on social media, and I'll address it here. Actually, John, someone bought a cameo from me, and they said, oh, I really loved what you said on The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy about the Briscoes, you know, like taking a stand for the Briscoes, about how in society and humanity we have to learn how to forgive people, especially if they legitimately are trying to change their ways or legitimately have changed. And I thought that was cool. But then they also said in the same cameo, which they didn't even ask for a cameo, they just literally wanted to interact with me. And then they said, hey, can you and your brother stop doing these table matches because they destroy your bodies? And at this stage of the game, you guys shouldn't be doing that. And I was like, dude, I don't think you understand. Like, it's probably easier for myself and Jeff to take a couple big bumps through tables than to get out there and have a 20-minute match and take 25 or 30 bumps, boom, 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 back to back, especially if they're big and intense bumps. You know, I would rather land flat on a table and go through it than actually land in a high angle bump, like on my neck or whatever. So there's an image or a belief that like these table matches are much more destructive to your body, but it's okay, guys. I promise we're going to be safe with every move that we make, or I will make sure as my brother's keeper that he is as safe as he can possibly be. Even though he is a little bit more of a stuntman than a wrestler, I am going to do the best to ensure he has longevity in his career.
Got to get a Jeff's keeper t-shirt going there, just to make sure you get a little collar. That'll be good stuff.
Now, I was just going to say too, even like with the few big bumps that we took, I thought I was going to be a lot more sore, especially when I did the elbow drop where I ran down the apron and Blade, and I crashed through the table. Like part of the table kind of jammed me in the back a little bit. My ribs were a little tight, and it's like, oh man, there might be bruised. That might bother me for a couple of days. But I took a hot bath after the match and soaked for 20 or 30 minutes, and I got home and was in my hot tub a couple times on the day, and then I was great. Like 24 hours, 36 hours later, I felt 100%.
That's awesome.
So it wasn't bad at all.
We got to start calling that Matt Hardy rules, because you came up with the table match rules for the 2000 match, right? So
I did, yeah. And I think now too, it almost gives me something to do in the future in a tag team match where I can like have another one of these matches and almost make a story out of the commentators not knowing it in the beginning. So I think there's something there.
Something to roll with there. The other big piece of news this week, Matt, Warner Media and Discovery merging together. This has been the talk of the town. And we did an episode on Strictly Business on ad-free shows about this, Eric Bischoff and I.
Okay. You did? All right.
You did. We did a full hour on it because Eric Bischoff had plenty to say about this. So go check that out on adfreeshows.com. But it's interesting because unlike WCW, Warner does not own AEW.
Right.
AEW has this really nice TV deal with Warner right now. And when
they are extremely happy with AEW right now too.
When you get these big media mergers, there is some concern, layoffs, stuff change. What's the level of concern like for you guys right now, if any, and how do you feel about that situation?
I mean, there's zero. I don't know of anyone that has been concerned about it. I haven't seen any kind of worry or concern. I mean, it's just business as usual. And For the foreseeable future, I continue to see it business as usual, especially because the Dynamite show is doing great. It's in top three, top five every single week. You know, it's a live program, which people love and they're really behind. And you have to always remember, too, it's only, you know, 3 years old, which is quite a statement that it's already in the top three to top five every single week.
Yeah, that's what Eric and I talked about, too. It's consistently in the top five for live TV, which is awesome. It's competing with sporting events, traditional sporting events. Yes. So that's all good stuff there. And you know what? Discovery made its money on these programs that kind of lend themselves to be similar to what an AEW Dynamite is, in that unscripted, it's scripted, but you know what I mean, like presentation. And I think it lends itself well. So hopefully all good stuff there. PapaCon cashed in big on that TV deal at the beginning of 2020. So
yeah,
we'll see what is to come.
I also think I think PapaCon is going to have a another big TV deal whenever this runs up as well, you know, because the product has just been delivering so damn well.
And WWE doing well with its TV deals also drives the market up in that
regard too. It does. I mean, pro wrestling, it has proven, especially the last few years, that it is truly something that people will they will search out and they will find it and they will watch it, and they will also like stick through the commercials the majority of the times too, which is crazy. They're really loyal. Pro wrestling fans are very, very loyal, and it's a great place for advertisers to go to get eyes on the product.
Well, and as Jim Ross says, we'll keep with it picture in picture. That's my favorite thing that AEW does. Uh-huh. Love me some picture in picture wrestling. So good stuff there, Matt Hardy. You've got a busy week this week as well, but we are talking WrestleMania 2000 leading up to the Triangle Ladder match here on the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. So it's Friday. You know what that means. Hit us with that Matt fact.
Matt fact: Matt's match at WrestleMania 2000 stole the show.
Yeah, it did steal the show. It sold the show. It did a lot of things because, quite frankly, it's a pretty shitty WrestleMania. And thankfully, we have this match on it, and we'll talk about that.
When is the last time you watched this whole WrestleMania, John?
About a year and a half ago. I watched this whole WrestleMania. I was just doing some innocuous things around the house, and I threw it on the TV, and holy Jesus, it is a bad wrestling show. Really,
it's so crazy too that, you know, that it's not perceived as a good wrestling show. I don't really remember the card in general. I remember the match that was after us, which was the main event was after us, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
No,
it wasn't.
It was not. You were followed by a cat fight between Terry and the cat.
Oh, that was the bumper. That was like the buffer. And then the main event.
Let's see. We were
late in the show. The only thing I really remember after us was the main event, because I think we were probably worried about like what our competition was.
No, you were fourth on the night and there were nine matches on the show.
Oh my God. Well, then I am way off. there you go. Once again, you can tell I've been in a lot of Triangle Ladder matches now.
Yes. Meshed together.
I feel like I remembered it was later in the show. And the reason being, I remember Bruce Pritchard, who was running Gorilla and doing the times and timing out the show there. I remember he told all six of us, he said, guys, time is not an issue. Don't worry about time. I know you guys are going to do a whole bunch of crazy shit. Take your time. If you need an extra 4 or 5 minutes, it's fine. Just don't rush it. Take your time. I know you guys are doing a lot of shit and there's a lot of setup involved in it. So don't rush. And we're like, whoa, that was really cool. And looking back at it now, 22 years later, like WrestleMania, like, I mean, 15 or 20 seconds. I mean, that's like, it's worth gold to get that on WrestleMania. And they're telling us like, oh, don't worry about it. I know you're doing a lot of stuff. Take your time. Go out there. If you need an extra 5 minutes, you know, where things are like, you know, marked down to the seconds in this day and age. If you get, you know, 10 or 15 minutes in WrestleMania, it's incredible. But they're telling us like, oh, if you go 25, fine, 30, fine, whatever. It's like, oh my God. And we're all rookies. This was like our first WrestleMania on the main card for all of us. So it was a wild scenario. That's why I feel like it was a lot deeper in the show, because they had plenty of time on the show. It's so funny that was earlier and they told us that, even, you know, like they weren't worried about time. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. First match of the night was a tag team match between Bossman, Buchanan, The Godfather, and D'Lo. That went 9 minutes. Then they had a 15-minute hardcore battle royal, which was one of the worst WrestleMania matches ever. And they fucked up the finish for. Then TNA beat Head Cheese in 7 minutes. So the night is flying pretty quickly at that point. So they gave you guys some good time.
Maybe they were just making up time. So that's why they give us extra.
Yeah.
But the reason I'm saying also, too, it's so strange that it was such a terrible WrestleMania. It's just because business was so hot at that time, which you would think that translates to like a really great product, which would translate in turn to a great WrestleMania. But, you know, apparently since you watched it a year and a half ago, I haven't watched it in since it happened. I don't think so.
Oh, I'd probably put this in my bottom five WrestleManias overall.
Okay, so that's wild that it doesn't, you know, correlate with the way business was so hot and so beloved at that time.
Well, we'll talk about this with Christian too in a little bit, but there are no traditional singles matches on that WrestleMania. Terry versus the Cat is the only singles match, and it's a cat fight. So that takes away a lot from the grandiose of WrestleMania.
Right.
And even in an era now where there's so many talent that you want to try to get on the card, they still make sure that there are a decent amount of singles matches, and it's not just every match is a multi-man match.
Yeah. You know, one thing I do remember, you know, the internet was just starting to come into, you know, to the forefront at that time. I do remember there were people complaining that the main event was not a singles match. I do remember some people were a little upset. It was a four corners match or whatever, right? It was a
McMahon in every corner.
Yes. And then Mick Foley, The Rock, Big
Triple
Show,
H and Big Show.
Triple H, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So and I do remember there being a little bit of blowback to the main event not being a standard, like, one-on-one, give us a match between two main eventers that we want or whatever. But
and, like, even so, listen, those are four outstanding talent to have in a Fatal 4-Way, but the story of the match was about the McMahons. It wasn't about any of the four guys. So it didn't – I like that face there that you gave. So
somebody make a GIF.
Matt Hardy brand on YouTube, guys. That alone was worth watching this episode. So
they're the best four words that any man could hear.
I knew you'd come. Are you looking to take your gimmick from broken to woken? Well, lucky for you, this episode of The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy is brought to you by Blue Chew. I know a lot of wrestling fans have plenty of bravado when it comes to sharing opinions on Twitter. But what about when it comes to stepping up to the plate in the bedroom? That's where Blue Chew comes in. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but it comes in chewable tablets at a fraction of the cost. Now, if you're like me and you're always on the road or you're at work at different hours every day, no problem. You can take them on a moment's notice, and then what do you know? Things are about to get extreme. And the process is incredibly easy. Sign up at BlueChew.com and consult with one of their licensed medical providers. Once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days, and all those confidence problems will soon become obsolete. The best part is, it's all done online. You don't have to go to the doctor. You don't have to wait in line at the pharmacy. And you can spend your free time creating poetry in motion rather than having awkward conversations about your ladder breaking before you can get it set up. Blue Chew tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet package. House Hardy has grown in size quite a bit over the years. That's because I know the importance of taking the twist of fate into your own hands rather than letting yourself become a whisper in the wind. The one of your sex life may not have been great, but the two can be. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, Blue Chew can help. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you have our promo code Hardy at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code Hardy, to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank you, Blue Chew, for sponsoring our podcast.
So let's turn back a little bit here. So as a reminder, the last time that we visited this feud, was at No Way Out 2000. Edge and Christian pinned you guys to earn the number one contender spot to become to face the newly crowned tag champs, the Damn Dudleys. Terry had distracted you guys. Then the APA attacked you. So that set up a match with the Acolytes the next night. And I want to throw this out there because this is just insane. And you mentioned how hot business was. Well, let's put in perspective here. Raw nearly tripled Nitro head-to-head for the first time ever that next night, ending with a 6.50 rating and a 9.9 share, while Nitro ended with a new record low with over the past few years to that point of a 2.57 rating and a 3.7 share. Your guys' match against the Acolytes did one of the strongest numbers of the night with a 6.70. How are you and Jeff feeling about how you're positioned here? Because if I'm reading into that correctly, you guys, you're an attraction.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't even aware of like ratings or quarter hours or segments then at that point, I'll be honest. But, you know, the one thing I can say looking back, if I was, I would love to say, you know, competition's in the mud. I love to see it. I did that. I trolled people with that for the longest time when I first turned heel as Big Money Matt. That clip that I specifically just wanted to do in the Elite Deletion with Sammy, so I could use that whenever I trolled people after I became a heel, where I had Sammy in the mud. So yeah, I mean that's cool, and I do know that we were one of the hot young acts because I knew our merchandise was doing so well. I know in the year 2000 we sold more merchandise than any other tag team in history over the course of that year, and like we were breaking records at every level, which is very, very cool, you know. And that was us in our prime or at our height, you know, whatever you want to say. But like, as far as the TV ratings, that's before that was like really came to like the forefront or like was a huge standard. That was something I guess they talked about more business as opposed to like talent in the locker room as they do today. It's much more of a common conversation because now it's something that, you know, fans have picked up on and they follow it as well. So now it's like a topic that is debated quite often in pro wrestling in general.
And you guys were so far ahead of Nitro at this point that it's not even competition anymore.
I do know that we had put the accelerator to the floor and we were blowing Nitro away. You know, I do know that there was a feeling in the locker room where the gap was so far away, guys were worried that we were getting so far away that it was ultimately going to be bad for business because they wanted competition to stick around. You know, because I do remember when we were there in 98, I feel like guys got treated a lot better. They were a lot more lenient if people wanted to negotiate deals or get better money because there was someplace else you could go and make big money besides a WWE. You know, obviously WCW was there and they had, you know, they had deep pockets as well. So I know the further down the road we got and once we started pulling more ahead of WCW, a lot of guys really were worried that if WCW does end up going out of business, it's going to be bad for business in the big scheme of things because it's going to take away a lot of leverage from, you know, the pro wrestlers who are classified as independent contractors.
And keep in mind at the time, too, the XFL is just starting to get off the ground, so Vince is putting a lot of money into that. You mentioned a few episodes ago that you felt like your paychecks were starting to see some of those losses as a result of that. WWF New York, which is a huge money loss for the company, just opens around this time too. So it is a really interesting time. But simultaneously, Matt, that match that I just mentioned, it's at Madison Square Garden, another show at MSG for WWE. Mm-hmm. You guys sell it out. So that's just what happens. That's business at that point.
I remember where anything less than a sellout and turning thousands of people away at MSG was a disappointment. You know, that's how business was then. And we would do, when we first started on the road in 1998, we would do 10 days on and then 4 days off, 10 days on, 4 days off. And no matter what day of the week it was, if it was Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it was sold out every single night. And not just sold out like 4,000 or 5,000 people sold out. It was sold out 18,000. 20,000, 25,000 people every single night.
So we're going to talk on this episode about how all three of these teams are losing matches leading up to WrestleMania. That's going to be a reoccurring theme here, and I'd like to delve into that. Edge and Christian lose that night to the New Age Outlaws, and that's X-Pac filling in for Billy Gunn, because if you remember, we talked about it on our No Way Out episode. Billy Gunn had gotten hurt, and they kept that match with the Dudley Boys super short. So now Edge and Christian, the new number one contenders, lose to the New Age Outlaws. So just keep that in the back of your head, okay? Also going on around this time, WWE gives notice to the USA Network that it's not going to be renewing its TV contract. Raw was a staple on USA at that point. What kind of chatter is there in the locker room about that? Because this is the first time that we see WWE trying to really cash in on a big new TV deal.
On TV rights, right? I feel like this was the beginning of the big TV rights battle, right? You know, because they'd been with USA since the start, and they had obviously had feelers out there, like in different places, in different markets. And I knew once we left USA, they were getting a huge pay bump, you know, so it was going to be more money going around. And I think as talent, we all hope that would translate to more money for us. Not that it necessarily did. I mean, the XFL and all the other projects going on, but, you know, WWE, they were kind of, you know, they were kind of set in their ways, and they had it down to a pretty decent formula then about what they were going to give guys, I feel like.
They would obviously end up going to TNN, the national network, and that would lead to Spike TV. And
we rebranded Spike.
I was doing my research, and there's also something cool that happened on this week. Christian York and Joey Matthews, your Omega brethren, are heading to ECW. What do you think of that opportunity for them?
Yeah, I remember I was very happy that they got that gig. And I want to say, had they already been in the developmental system with WWE?
Because they came after that. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what it was then. I was very happy that they got that gig. And I said, you know, I said, go there, achieve as much as you possibly can and try and build up a name for yourself. And then I'll do what I can do to try and get you in here at WWE. And eventually we did at a developmental level.
That's cool that you were looking out for them too. So.
Try to. I would try and take care of all the Omega guys.
Next week on Raw in Springfield, insane. Steve Blackman pins Matt Hardy in 4 minutes and 44 seconds with a front kick off the top rope. In The Observer, it is referred to as deathly quiet and not good.
Steve Blackman was always very challenging to work with. Always very challenging, especially, you know, coming off all the matches we were having with Edge, Christian, and the Dudleys and whatnot. You know, just once again, I almost compare that to, you know, the young guys now in AEW, you know, they could work with me. I still get the style and I can still do my part to pull my weight. I feel like we represented that young guy then that had this high work rate and could do all the, you know, all the crazy stuff and all the cool spots and take big bumps, whatever. But I don't think people like Steve Blackman, for instance, I don't think he was a guy that really meshed well with a guy like me or with Jeff or, you know, an Edge or Christian, whatever. It made it a lot tougher to have a real great match because we were so very different and had different styles in the ring.
Also that night, Dean Malenko and Perry Saturn beat Edge and Christian. And that's via distraction from Terry. So that's two losses now for Edge and Christian since they beat you guys to become the number one contenders.
I mean, I really, even looking back at this and thinking about it now, I mean, I think Vince thought because of that tag team ladder match we had where we really got over huge, you know, the Hardys versus Edge and Christian, and then the tables match with the Hardys versus the Dudley Boys, he just felt like we were Teflon. Like, we didn't need these wins. And people were going to cheer for us regardless of what we're doing just because of our performances. And I would guess that was his mindset at that time.
How do you feel as a worker, though, about that? Because
it's frustrating.
Yeah, it has to. You have to be concerned about your credibility as a talent.
Of course, I mean, you know, and that was one of those things too, where, you know, they just say trust us, let it play out. I know that's a famous statement now on the internet. You know, let it play out. Let it play out. We got a plan. You know, and it's just one of those things. It would become very frustrating, especially when you know you get to go out and you get to do you. And you make this magic happen, you're getting these insane crowd reactions, and then you kind of get, you know, reeled back. And then you get very frustrated, you know, especially if they don't portray you in the way you feel like you get very frustrated if they don't portray you in the way the crowd wants to see you portrayed as. And that's where the tide was starting to turn a little bit, and people were really starting to understand the business, because in the Attitude Era, we kind of like gave everyone a peek behind the curtain, and now the internet is starting to come into prevalence and whatnot. So they're starting to read stuff, and they're starting to pick up more on like, you know, dirt sheets / you know, internet wrestling sites and whatnot. So they're learning a lot more about the behind the scenes stuff. So I'm sure that makes them question like, well, why are these guys getting beat all the time? Why are these guys getting beat all the time? They're really over. You know, but it was what it was, and we were all young guys, and we were just going to go out and do our job to the best of our ability and make the most out of every scenario we had.
I would love to know your thoughts on the let it play out mentality, because I look at it in two ways. In some situations, a company or a booking committee or whatever writers have built up good faith that you know that they will pay something off. And then in other situations, I feel like let it play out is used as a way just to give an excuse for something happening when there's no actual end game in sight.
And to let it slide. Yeah, I mean, I feel like with WWE now, I mean, if you hear that expression of like, let it play out, they've kind of burnt their trust, you know, with their consumers, you know, with their fans. I just don't think people trust them anymore, because there's been so many times that people were very patient and they waited for it to play out, but it just never did. So I think just kind of burnt their trust with wrestling fans when it comes to that.
Because long form storytelling, when you do pay something off down the line, as we just covered with this broken story, which was a quite literally 2-year payoff, right. Like, it's so rewarding as a fan. It's great, because as I've brought up to you on this podcast, when you get rewarded for paying attention, there's like no better feeling.
And I feel like that's when you become ultimately invested in whatever you're watching.
So it's just, I hear it all the time online, let it all play out. And
yeah, I mean, it's became like a meme now, right? You know, just people say it, you know, when they know it's going to be bad, you know, oh, don't worry, just let it play out. It really does become a meme.
Were you ever told that by anybody in management, to just let it all play out?
You know, okay. I haven't. I mean, I've probably been told, well, I mean, trust me, we, you know, think about the big picture. You know, we got a big story here. This is just one small piece of the puzzle. You know, I've never heard that exact phrase.
Sure.
No one has tried to set me on that before. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. Now, around this time, you guys are running triple threat tag matches on house shows against the Dudleys. What do you remember about those matches, and how did that help you guys establish some chemistry together?
Yeah, us, the Dudleys, and ENC, is that correct? Yeah. I remember we enjoyed the matches. They were good, and we all thought they were easy, and we were very happy with, you know, the content we would ultimately deliver at the end of those, because we were just guys who were on the same page. We all had the same mindset, and we were all just so like-minded. It ended up being really, really good, entertaining work.
Also in the span, both Jeff and Christian are getting matches with S.A. Rios, and he's packaged with Lita at the time. These are heralded matches. Everyone is really mystified by what S.A. Rios can do in the ring, and obviously giving him dancing partners like Jeff and Christian. That's awesome. Why do you think S.A. never became more in WWE? He was great, man.
I mean, probably just attitude, mentality, yeah. You know, it just... I feel like back then you kind of had to half-ass be a politician to like stay in a good spot and continue to move up the card. And you know, I was the one that always handled business for Jeff. I mean, I still do. Jeff would just go out and be a rock star. That's always been our gig. You know, I'm the architect. I'm the one that, you know, handles politics and business. And I make sure we're going in the correct direction that we need to be going in. And he just goes out there and he does his rock star gig. That's kind of our relationship. And I feel like you learn that as time goes on. Obviously for Bubba and Devon, it was Bubba. He was the guy always heading up kind of the direction of the team. And then Edge and Christian, they were both guys who could do it on their own, you know, so they would definitely be on top of it as well. So with S.A. Rios, he's probably just a guy that came there and performed, and he was good and he had all this potential, but you know, if he never pushed, you know, or if he never tried to open any doors, you know, unwillingly, if he just came there to do his job, he was probably limited because he just didn't have the, you know, the gritty political vibe to push himself forwards and get into a better spot.
On March 12th, pretty big win for you on Heat. You beat Viscera one-on-one.
Viscera.
How about that?
What a weird, you know, like get beat by Steve Blackman, but then beat Viscera. What a weird scenario.
You had some help from Jeff, but still.
Yeah. What did we beat him with? Do you have that info in front of
you? I don't remember the exact finish of the match, but Jeff helped distract you to help distract him for you to get the win.
There you go. Okay. You got to win over the big man, brother.
On Sunday Night Heat.
On Sunday Night Heat.
So that's a big one. I always heard that he was a really cool guy and a nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was a good dude. So he was real cool. Him and Mo, they actually came up and did a lot of indies in the Carolinas before we did.
Oh.
And later on, when there were Men on a Mission, right? You know, Mo, Mabel, and Oscar. There was one point where Mo came out and did an Omega show with us. You know, once he like wasn't doing a full-time gig at WWE, and he kind of gave back to it a little bit and hooked us up with a deal and came out and did that show, which we thought was really cool because we'd booked a guy that had legitimately been on WWE TV before. And unlike Manny Fernandez, we actually really booked him, and he really showed up. And we really paid him because he was legit booked.
Fucking La Quinta's, man. That's just crazy.
Hi, Manny.
We got to get Manny on the show at some point.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Next night in Jersey, another sellout at the Meadowlands, man. You guys are crushing it there. You beat Al Snow and Steve Blackman. Another match that it just seems like chemistry wasn't off per the reports. But then later that night, the Acolytes beat Edge and Christian with help from Midian. This is, dude, none of this makes any sense to me. I understand what you just said, what Vince is telling you, but they're the number one contenders.
John, let it play out. We're going to get to WrestleMania.
I swear.
By the way, I wanted to jump in here too. Yes. We had one of our amazing folk here, Dom, doing a little research real quick, and he just said that Viscera match was the ref was checking on me, and Jeff delivered the Swanton, and that's how I beat him. So once again, you know, there it is. Those dastardly Hardy boys have to cheat to win. They're a little piece of shit baby faces.
That's like your right, exactly. Like that's like your version of twin magic almost, something like that. Wow. Right. But I want to know, how did you get Viscera down in the first place for Jeff to hit him with this? I'm not going to go back and watch Matt Hardy.
I would guess he came in and missed the splash on me and took himself down. That would be my guess. Okay. I have no idea if that's accurate. I don't remember this match at all. I have zero recollection of it. And that would be my guess, is that he's beat me up so bad, he goes for a splash, I move, and he's selling down, and the ref just checks on me, and Jeff does the Swanton.
We can rewrite history and say that you slammed him like Andre at WrestleMania 3 if you'd like.
Okay,
I don't think anybody's going to go back and find it. So
I think also, too, all of this goes back, even like Steve Blackman being a bigger, jacked-up guy who worked a more basic, earlier 80s style or whatever, you know, being a Kung Fu karate assassin or whatever. I feel like, oh my God, Dom just told me I nailed it. That's what happened.
There you go.
There you have it. I mean, that's just my guess. But like, once again, Vince always protected his big guys. You know, because we were like we were smaller guys. We were the new breed. And maybe he knew this is where it was going. But Vince's mentality is like, these big guys had to be protected always. So I'm sure that's why that happened with Viscera. And even with Steve Blackman, too, I know, I'm sure he said, well, you know, this little guy who does all this flippy shit and does all these high spots and stuff, Steve Blackman, who's like a legit assassin, and he is like a legit badass, says if he beats him, it's no big deal. You know, I don't even think Vince would think about, you know, the context of a wrestling match or how good it was or how entertaining it was then. I don't even think that really was like a priority in the back of his mind. I think he was just looking for two guys in the ring trying to build up some sort of story for a fight. And then, you know, the guy who looks the most physically intimidating or the biggest is the guy who most likely should win. I feel like that was his mentality in that day and age.
I personally liked my finish better, but we can go with that one too. So,
I mean, I did. Not only did I slam him, I press slammed him. So like a warrior. And I repped him 17 times.
So let's keep going here because we got to get moving. But the reason I bring up this show, we spent way more time talking about Viscera than I anticipated we would. The reason I talk about this Raw show is because this is the night that's known for Bubba Ray
more or less killing Mae Young. He ends up powerbombing her off the stage through some tables, and it's like an iconic Dudley Boys moment.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that?
I mean, that was the start of a big thing. That's when he started doing the trance too, right? I remember that got over huge, almost to the point it was so dangerous that he was a heel that just people wanted to see that because people were so bloodthirsty and they loved seeing women get put through tables at that time. I do remember well, and I remember Mae coming in the back and she was like, hell yeah, that's the way to go. I mean, she was like fired. She was fired the fuck up and she was excited about it. She was fine. I'm pretty sure Bubba took real good care of her. And they it looked great, and they did it, and it started that whole trend of him going into the going into the stair, being in the trance, and powerbombing women through tables, which got over huge, almost getting over so huge it was like a babyface thing.
He has told this story, and I believe I'm quoting verbatim here, but Mae told him to not be a quote fucking pussy, and
yes, that's true. Yeah, that is true. She was very foul mouthed anyway, you know, right? Like she was a dirty old lady, bless her heart, but she was very foul mouthed, you know, and that is what she told him. You're right. She said, look, she said, just because I'm an old lady, don't be a fucking pussy boy. Legit.
As you said on our Rumble 2000 episode in the archive, she was a filthy, disgusting woman and everyone loved her for it. So good stuff there. So finally, here we are, like 2.5 weeks out from WrestleMania. We're getting some integration between all you guys. On SmackDown, the Dudleys beat Edge and Christian. They were the number one contenders after rep bump. Terry got involved. You guys come out, throw Terry into the ring, and Edge spears her. So we're all on the same page for our mutual hatred of Terry at this point.
Version one together.
There you go. V1 finally together. Exactly. In Chicago the next week, we get a tag team tournament throughout the show to qualify teams for a battle royal later in the night, where the winner of the battle royal will go on to face the Dudleys at WrestleMania. Unique concept, a lot going on there. That means a lot of short matches, but you guys beat X-Pac and Road Dogg.
Oh my God. Speaking of this, this is in Chicago. This is the loudest crowd I've ever been in front of.
So actually the newsletter said that this is one of the wildest Chicago crowds they've ever seen for a wrestling show.
Myself and Road Dogg, at one point we're in the ring and he was saying something like almost like calling, you know, wanting to slow down the cadence of the way we locked up because the crowd was so hot or whatever it was. And the crowd was chanting so loud. I remember saying like, I can't hear you. He was saying stuff and it was literally like it was muted.
Wow.
Because the crowd was so loud. I said, I can't hear you. And I had to lock up with him and get close so I could actually hear what he was saying. It was so loud. He was a few feet in front of me, and he said something, called something, whatever. And I said, I cannot hear you, Brian. I can't hear you. I just remember that was the most enthusiastic, loud, insane crowd I can ever remember being part of. It was insane. It was
just an episode of Raw. Just a standard episode of Raw.
And they always were historically, especially like when it was the Rosemont Arena back then. I mean, that would be the loudest crowd on the whole loop. And I vividly remember that match so very well because it was so loud and people were just so overly enthusiastic. It was just mind-blowing.
You should go check out Road Dogg's Oh You Didn't Know pod as well. That's just getting off the ground now, and you can find that on ad-free shows as well. He's a great storyteller, so I think that's
He's cool. The best. Pretty cool. You didn't know?
Oh, you didn't know?
I'll never forget, man. I got to say this with Road Dogg. There was a time where myself and Jeff wrestled him and Billy in a cage. And he kept talking about how he would jump on the trampoline. Like Jeff and I would jump on the trampoline when we were young. And he said, man, I was on the trampoline, man. I can do a backflip. I can do a backflip. He said, I'd be scared to do it, man, on, you know, in the ring. Cause I think I'd break my neck if I jumped off the ropes or whatever. He said, dude, we're in a cage. I said, you can hold on to the cage. I said, you should do a backflip. And we talked him into doing a moonsault where Jeff and I shot him. He ran up the ropes and did a moonsault to both of us. He said, man, I shouldn't do that. I said, no, do it. You can do a backflip on a trampoline. You keep bragging to us about it that you're part of the TWF too. You learned this hot spot on a trampoline. We learn our stuff on a trampoline. So we want you to do it. And we finally talked him into doing it. It's probably the only time he's ever done a moonsault in his existence. He runs and he jumps up and comes off the top and moonsault body blocks on it. Jeff and I, we spot him like $1 million, and he almost lands back on his feet. But the excitement in his face whenever he lands and he's safe and he starts doing a suck it as hard as he possibly can. He was like so excited, like a little kid. He did a moonsault and we spotted him and he was safe and he didn't break his neck. That's one of my favorite Road Dogg stories ever. That's a tangent, but I had to share it.
No, that's great. That's a great story. That's why we appreciate you on the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. So Edge and Christian beat the APA. That sets all of you guys up in the Battle Royal. It's you guys, Too Cool, Head Cheese. And it comes down to you guys. I like the stakes here, but the Dudleys, who are on commentary, interfere, and they powerbomb Jeff through Christian on a table, which gets us the official announcement that it will be a three-way ladder match, a triangle ladder match.
I remember that now that you say that. I recall that.
I like the way that's laid out. I think that's unique. And for once, we're actually protecting you guys rather than having everyone lose here. So, and it plays into what the Dudleys are doing, right? They're psychos and getting involved.
That is great storytelling. I feel like that works perfectly.
So, yeah. So now it's just pretty much all about building heat with you guys. And what better way to build heat than you guys losing to Kai and Tai? Because that's what happens on SmackDown.
There you go.
Edge and Christian did help Kai and Tai win. So later in the night, Jericho and Taz are facing Edge and Christian, and you guys help Jericho and Taz win. So we're just getting in there. And meanwhile, that same night, The Rock faces Bubba Ray Dudley one-on-one. He's Bubba's over at this point.
Yeah.
What was the reaction backstage to the Dudleys at this time? Were people recognizing how over they were getting?
People were happy with them. They were appreciative of their work, and I think they had really earned their spot, like in the locker room and also on the roster. Yeah, they were successful, and I know the Bubba thing, putting chicks through tables, was over huge. And anytime Vince has a concept of something different or strange that's never been done, that people really, really react to, he's always excited for it. So they were over. People were into them for sure.
So then on the final Raw leading up to WrestleMania, Perry Saturn and Dean Malenko, well, guess what they do, Matt Hardy? They beat the Hardy Boys. Edge and Christian helped them do that. And then on SmackDown, Road Dogg and X-Pac, guess what they do?
They beat Edge and Christian. Even I can't even remember. I don't even recall that we did that, you know, multiple times. Apparently we like screwed each other. The fact that there was like this personal vendetta, kind of like a personal rivalry between the Hardys and Edge and Christian, I can kind of get behind that. And I feel like that sounds very repetitive from you just, you know, putting it on me like that. I would have done it in different ways. I would have found interesting ways to maybe like even have it backfire or something that last week.
Exactly.
You know, I feel like you could have had, you know, especially if we had the week before where Edge and Christian screwed us, we screwed Edge and Christian. Maybe the next week we both try and screw the other team.
And it doesn't work.
Backfires exactly. And we still overcome the odds or whatever. That's what I would have done, you know, but what do I know? I'm just a chump in this business. But just to kind of break the repetitiveness of it. And then I think it was good that we kind of portrayed this gig like something is going to break between Edge and Christian and the Hardys. Because I do think turning Edge and Christian heel, you know, following this match was the right move.
Yeah.
Because those guys were really geared to become heels, and it was the direction they needed to go to the next stage of the game, next level of their career.
And, like, one thing I understand about it is those other teams that we mentioned for the most part, except for Kai and Tai, but the other teams, like, they also have WrestleMania matches. They're going to be on the card. I understand you got to give them some wins too, but you guys are the ones – fighting for the championships. So having all of these teams that are in the championship match lose by hook or by crook, I don't really care. It feels like it's devaluing your importance leading into this match, and that WWE is just banking on you guys going out and having a car crash match at WrestleMania that everybody's going to forget about all the stuff leading up to it.
Yeah, and I just really think Vince never saw tag teams as, you know, like a main event draw. He just didn't. Tag teams were disposable. You know, I mean, he knew we were killing it as far as like doing merch, and you know, the royalties we were making were like out of this world, and we were moving merchandise, but I still think he kind of felt like we were all Teflon, and it didn't hurt us to get beat. You know, even though I feel like to maintain credibility, you do need to pick up wins, you know, especially in key situations. But just tag team wrestling has never been Vince's thing. You know, Vince is looking always for the next single star that's going to be a breakout star and become the world champion or someone he can build a company around, you know, a Undertaker or a Triple H or a Rock or a Stone Cold Steve Austin or a Brock or a Roman Reigns. That is what Vince covets. That is what he, you know, that's what he wants. That's what he's looking for always.
Yeah. Well, also that night, Rikishi and Kane beat the Dudleys clean in a non-title match. I just don't understand that. It doesn't make any sense to me. They are your champions and you're beating them clean on the go home show to
that's
wrestle.
That's very strange. Yeah, that's very strange.
I just don't get that. You guys do get a win later in the night, and then there's a little brouhaha with all three teams that sets up the ladder match. But my whole point of breezing through all that, setting us up for this watch along, is just no matter how many times you've explained it, and you have explained it, I do not understand. And maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe now in wrestling, we put more of an emphasis on the importance of wins. But even as a storytelling device, this just seems like overkill to me.
Yeah, I think we definitely do now. But I feel like Vince is old school. He's kind of old fashioned where in his mind, entertainment doesn't necessarily, you know, keep a character strong if it's a win or a loss. It's like the context of the story the character's in. Like a win or loss is irrelevant as long as the story is good, you know, along his journey. I feel like that's kind of what his mindset is. Where I feel like now in this day, in this age, especially with AEW, because we promote such a sports-centric product, where wins and losses matter, you know, even keeping records, having rankings and whatnot. So it's like a real deal. Obviously, in real sports, wins and losses matter. You know, that's determines if you become the world champion of the year. You know, if you win the Super Bowl or you win the World Series or whatever it may be, wins and losses matter. With wrestling, it's different to a degree because it's entertainment. And I feel like Vince still believes, more importantly, that wins and losses are secondary to the storytelling and what the character is doing and also his motivation and whatnot.
Well, again, I also think it kind of damages credibility as characters a little bit to have all those losses, but maybe that's just my take on it. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, but I also think too, John, as we've talked about in the past, I feel like you are more of a modern wrestling fan. And sure. I think they are really important in this day and age because people understand it's entertainment, but they also want a sports-centric type vibe to it, which means wins and losses have to matter because in sports, wins and losses matter. And if wrestling is going to portray itself as a half-assed sport, as long as entertainment, also wins and losses have to somewhat matter.
What just bothers me, and this is the last point I'm going to make because I know we got to get to our watch along. The last point that I want to make is when you have all of these preconditioning of, oh, guys can lose and all that, it normalizes that. And it preconditions fans to think in a way that they can be numb to characters being set back by losses and then just not caring about that. And for me, that is not healthy for efficient long-form storytelling.
Agreed.
So,
agreed.
Just my thoughts on that.
By now you know that everything is crazy overseas, and well, that's created some volatility in the market. We actually saw rates tick down a little bit this week. We don't know how long it'll stay that way. All the experts are predicting that there is going to be a rate hike this month in the month of March. Some are saying 25 basis points, others are saying 50. What does that mean? It means waiting will cost you money. And by the way, I want to mention, this is still a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity just based on your real estate values. You see, all of a sudden, your house is worth considerably more than it was just a couple of years ago, and as a result, you can use that newfound equity to change your life. We're routinely helping our podcast listeners take their 30-year loan and pay it off in half the time. And how can they afford to do that without their payments going sky high? We get rid of all their other debt. And I mean it. As a heads up, what would you do if you had no credit card debt? Just like that, it was all paid off. How much easier would life be if those car payments, whoop, they're out of here. No more car payments. That is the story that we're able to help our friends and family with at SaveWithConrad.com. You see, the interest you pay on your credit cards, not tax deductible, and sky high. The interest you pay on your car loans. Buddy, where is that going? What if we could restructure all of your debt, use some of this newfound equity, and at the same time, get you out of debt faster? You see, what we're talking about is reducing the time on your mortgage. Yes, we're going to get you a great rate, but if you're in a 30-year loan, think about what your life looks like 30 years from now.
Man, life gets a lot easier when you're completely debt-free, and that's what we want to help you do. And by the way, you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket. And oh, as a heads up, if you've been thinking, hey man, I like my house, but my kitchen's kind of outdated, what if we could get you the cash you need to turn your average kitchen into something your wife loves, and it wouldn't change your monthly payment at all? Why wouldn't you do that? You see, you'd be reinvesting back in your own property. That's going to make your house worth even more. And oh yeah, you can do it with cheaper monthly payments at SaveWithConrad.com. Now, I know it sounds too good to be true, but I want you to go check out our reviews for yourself. See what some of our new family members are saying at ConradReviews.com. You'll see there we've got over 1,000 verified reviews. Our average rating is 4.72. And if we were a restaurant with 1,000 reviews and a 4.72 rating, I know where you're eating dinner, and I know where you need to do your next loan. It's SaveWithConrad.com. NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. Oh, and did I mention no house payments for 2 months? That's SaveWithConrad.com.
All right, so we promised you guys that we would have a very special guest on this week's edition of The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, and we are now joined by him, none other than Christian Cage himself, a longtime Hardy frenemy, as Matt said before. How you doing today, man? How's everything going?
I'm doing good, but don't you know having me as a surprise is a big letdown?
No, it's not. This is the guy that made Edge and Christian.
There you go. That's what I like to hear.
He was the secret sauce, John.
Yeah. He was the secret sauce. That's exactly it. That's
Christian Cage.
That's the terminology I use all the time.
Run the merch.
So, Christian, what we've been talking about leading up to this match, this Triangle Ladder match, is how much you guys were so inconsistently booked leading up into this match. Oh. Each team was losing week in and week out leading up to this triple threat ladder match.
I didn't even remember that. Like, we got beat all the time. You guys got beat. Douglas got beat.
I had no recollection of it either. Yeah. But it's also, I guess, par for the course at the time, too, right? It was very much week to week at that point for us. And we were just trying to get our footing on that. And I don't think any of us were at the stage yet where we questioned a lot of things. Mm-hmm. We just kind of went with the flow. And I think once we knew that we had this match locked in, regardless of what they did beforehand, we were going to steal the show.
Yeah. And I also told John, I think, too, like, Vince – tag teams at that time, they weren't his priority. Yeah. We're like, fine. And I think he's like, oh, these guys are Teflon. They'll go out and have a great match and everybody will forget about it. So that's kind of the position we're in.
What did you make of this WrestleMania card in hindsight, looking back at it? Matt and I were talking. This card, WrestleMania 2000, there is one singles match on it. It is Terry versus the Cat in a cat fight. And every other match is either a multi-person match or a tag match in some capacity. So you guys are tasked with going out there and trying to steal the show. Do you guys remember what you were thinking leading into that moment?
I don't know. I feel like this was kind of like the last of the WrestleMania in the arena type events, right? Was it not?
The next year was
in Houston at the Astrodome.
Right.
Yeah, the next year was. It kind of got bigger after that. And then we went to the Sky Dome. For 2002, right? Yeah. I mean, it was the start of it for sure. This was kind of like the last smaller arena, arena.
Even though
as opposed to a stadium.
In the pond in Anaheim, too, at the time was kind of like our Madison Square Garden of the West.
It was.
Like, we weren't running LA consistently for TV or pay-per-views. It was always Anaheim. And I remember it being a different feeling in that arena that night than it had been for any other event that we'd done in there before. It was electric. It was at least for our match, it felt like people were ready for that match and were excited for it and wanted to see it, especially after coming on the heels of what we did in the first ladder match when it was just Edge and Christian versus the Hardys.
And this definitely predates the Stable Center, right, being open. I mean, that it really was. This was our center there, right?
It might have been open, but I don't know if we were necessarily running it at the time.
I don't feel like we were.
It might not have been open.
Whenever you say that it was our MSG of the West, right. I agree with that statement. That was accurate. It was a big deal. Anaheim was always a loaded show. And this WrestleMania had a special energy to it, too.
The Staples Center had just opened, actually, the weekend of your No Mercy ladder match.
Oh, wow.
So it was still a relatively new venue. You guys weren't running it yet. And I was going to ask about the crowd, but I'll get this watch along going here and get things started, and we'll talk about that. If any of you want to watch along with this match with us and want to watch on Peacock, is 58:31 on Peacock. So go ahead, pause this, get your stuff set up. Christian, I know you and Matt are seeing tons of royalties from Peacock. So,
Hey man, what about those royalties?
Yeah.
Magic right there, my friend. So pull that thing up right now. It is the fourth match on this WrestleMania 2000 card, 58-31. And we're going to watch along here on Matt Hardy brand as well in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin. So we take it with the Hardys coming to the ring. Jeff.
That's where he started going around a lot. First time ever.
Yeah, I remember him doing that. I was like, oh, boy.
And that became a thing after yeah. that. He had to do it every single time because he's a fucking maniac.
Yeah.
A psychopath. Stuntman.
I remember we were kind of in the like the bowels of the building here somewhere waiting to go out. And it was kind of like there was like skids that you stack things on and like little tractors and stuff. And we were just waiting. And I just remember I just had this sensation of having like a really dry mouth. That's really vivid to me that I was like, I wasn't like nervous. I was more anxious to get out there and just get it started because, you know, like this was the first time we'd done this at this point. It was just the triple threat tag ladder match, right? It was this was before TLC.
And this was the first time we'd opened on the main card of Mania too.
Yeah. Yep.
You know?
Oh yeah, that's right.
It really was. Yeah.
When you guys have the ladder match in your pocket, Matt and Jeff have the tables match from the Royal Rumble in the pocket. What are the expectations you set for yourself coming into this?
I mean, they were high. Yeah. I mean, they were every time we did one of these, the expectations were high. And it's funny because if you watch back from the first ladder match as they went along, you know, we learned how to incorporate more psychology into these type matches rather than just having a car crash and doing big things with the ladders, not just for the sake of doing it. Of course, that's, there's nothing like getting that crazy reaction when the fans see a car crash, but it's also you want it to make sense in the context of the match.
Yeah, man. If you watch this match and then you go fast forward a year to TLC 2, the psychology is so drastically better.
Yeah, and we're still learning at this point how to make that happen in these types of matches. You know,
we were paving new ground here.
That's exactly the point I was going to make. It's not like you have anything to lean on.
Right.
It's interesting you brought that up because I was going through some old observers doing research for this, and Dave Meltzer in particular mentioned that this came off as very much a stunt show in comparison to some of the other great matches that you guys put together, including the tables match, including the ladder match.
Well, I mean, this is the first time we did the triple threat, so there was added two more bodies into there that you had to be, figure into everything. So, and, you know, everybody has to be protected in their own way, and you know, we honestly, at this point, up until about, I think maybe a few days before we actually sat down to put this together, we didn't even know what the finish was. At one point, it was somebody else winning, and Edge and Christian were splitting up after this. So then we kind of, we started to talk. Was it a little bit before this or after this when we kind of started talking, and then we turned... I'm not getting it all mixed up. We're already heels here, right?
No. This I think you turned after this. Yeah. This was kind of like the catalyst that I think that ultimately turned you heel. And going into this, which we recorded earlier in the podcast, was you kind of screwed us out of some matches, right? And we screwed you guys building to this too.
So it was like leading up to when we had that. Did we already have that sit down interview like on Heat, where we kind of just went off the cuff? They told us just to say whatever we wanted to.
Yeah.
And then Adam and I started dropping F-bombs. And that kind of... because we weren't supposed to... We were supposed to lose, and that changed the minds. They were like, oh, these guys aren't done yet. There's more layers to as a tag. And they decided to have us win the match and then turn heel because they saw some personality there when we were doing... We did that promo, and then we did a couple things on commentary. And that was kind of the thing that saved Edge and Christian as a team, because we were going to split up after this.
And I mean, there's times where I can be critical of like decisions that WWE or Vince would make, whatever. And you guys winning this match was 100% the right call. And especially turning heel, because that worked wonders for you. And you're totally right. I do remember they were ready to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Try and get singles guys, whatever. But that interview pulled them back in. They said, whoa, we got way more we can do with these guys.
Right. And at this point too, you guys had all won the tag titles, and we hadn't won them yet.
T-Von Sale.
Yeah.
He's so great.
D-Von, he said, I'm going to hit my Hulk Hogan cell, brother.
Yeah.
Shake, spasm.
Yeah, and we're just trying, you know, we're just doing some signature stuff here, just trying to, you know, kind of build towards these ladders. And you know, like I said, we kind of learned as we went here as far as, you know, the main thing to never lose focus on is – the object of this match is to get what's hanging above it.
Yeah.
And never lose sight of that. When you have a chance to go get it, go get it. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense in the context, psychology-wise. If you're just setting up, everybody's on the floor, but you set up the ladder to jump on everybody on the floor, it doesn't make sense.
Right.
If everybody's on the floor, set up the ladder and try to win. That's
and there are some instances in this where I see that where it's like, I wish we had changed that or we hadn't have done that or whatever. Yeah. Or just, you know, positioned it differently.
Right.
You know, but once again, we knew we had to provide a lot of entertaining spots and some big high spots in this, considering what we came off
of. Yeah, and like here, like I'm just standing there watching Bubba do a move. Like, it's not to my partner, but like later on, we probably would have staggered this and gave the entire platform to themselves to do
and
that.
And we would have fucked off outside the
ring. And then we would have.
Here, Matt, this sucks. Matt, you're under a ladder here. Watch this.
Yeah, I remember that. And that wasn't bad at all.
No. The weight of the ladder and edge on top of that isn't that bad.
Yeah, Adam took good care of me.
What is the pain threshold for falling on a ladder? Like in comparison to a chair or a table, I think a lot of wrestling fans.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because you hit something, you go, okay, that hurt. But your adrenaline is pumping. Like, you know, there's a lot of things going on in your mind, and also like the crowd reacting, you know, puts your adrenaline at a different level. So a lot of times something happens and you don't really think about it, but then you feel it like when you cool down, like you'll feel it an hour or two later and like, man, that hurt. But when you're out there, you're just trying to get through the match and put on the performance that the crowd deserves.
And two, it's one thing if you take a big bump off something high and you land on the mat, you know, it's flat. And if you land flat, as we're supposed to do as trained pro wrestlers, you know, you optimize the safeness of it. You know, whenever you land on a ladder, it is not flat and your body isn't hitting in an even capacity. So that's dangerous. I mean, like taking bumps on ladders is dangerous without a doubt.
Yeah. And this funny thing is too, like if you climbed up the ladder to the top during the day or the night before, whatever it was, and the arena is empty, it's terrifying. It's scary because it feels so high and like the arena is so empty and just seems so big. And then when you it's filled with people, it's weird. It just goes away. It feels like somehow closed in. It's a strange feeling. It's strange to kind of explain to people.
It's adrenaline, the power of adrenaline.
We asked a lot of our Extreme Life of Matt Hardy fans to send in some questions for this match and using hashtag Ask Matt. And Brian wants to know, with this being the first WrestleMania for all of you, how much pressure did all of you put on yourself to steal the show? And were there any spots that you wanted to do but could not?
I don't think there was any, like, you know, nobody could put more pressure on us than we put on ourselves, right? Like, the goal was to go out there and steal the show. And we were, like you were talking about earlier, the lead up. And I just remember, like, you know, just having things not really making sense leading up. And I just remember that we knew that these opportunities, if we didn't put on something special or something that people were going to talk about or remember, we weren't going to get a chance to do it again. So, and, like, we wanted to put tag team wrestling on the forefront of the company. We wanted it to be must see.
Yeah.
We wanted it to be, we need these guys on the show every single week. That was our goal at this point in time, was to get to that position where these three teams need to be on the show every single week.
Going back to what we just watched there too, one of the dangerous things about these matches are the inanimate objects laying in different positions in the ring. Like when that spear happened, that other ladder was laying behind them. You have to be very careful about where that stuff's positioned, hopefully try and keep it moving out of the way, especially if you're actively taking bumps in the ring. See, I mean, they were plenty far away, but if that ladder would have been a little further over, that would have been catastrophic.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty spectacular spot there, but because of what you guys topped the year after, people talk about the other one, the other spear from Edge.
Yeah, I mean, and once again, it was like elevating it. And I remember this spear is what we eventually elevated the spear off the ring to. And that all kind of built anyway, because you had him getting spear off the ladder, and then you had those guys hanging on the ring at SummerSlam in the first TLC, and then at WrestleMania in TLC 2, Jeff was hanging from the ring, and he got speared by Adam. So that continued to build. And once again, that's us trying to raise the bar each time.
We got Christian climbing the ladder here.
The dreaded butt punch.
Yeah.
The ass punch from Butt Ray.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the first time Road Dogg came to a house show and he was wrestling.
Yeah.
And it had like Bubba Road. Yeah. And the way the H's were written, it was like through. And he said, who the hell's Butt? Who's Butt? That's how Bubba, B-U-H-B-U-H, looked.
Oh, that cutter off the ladder. That crowd went nuts for that. What'd that feel like?
That was a little jarring, but you know, it's as long as you distribute your weight evenly and land flat, it's gonna jar you no matter what.
Yeah.
Is it hard for you guys to watch this back all these years later?
It's not hard. No. I mean, I see things that I wouldn't do that we're doing here that I would not even dream about doing now, or like, hey, this probably would have been better here, or you know, like I said,
I guess I meant from a critical sense. Like,
I see a lot of holes in my work for sure. That's you know, right. And I see a lot of holes in like psychology in the match too. Things that I would do differently for sure.
Here we go, Matt. Got to play the greatest hits.
Yeah, look at everybody standing.
That's it. Yeah,
that's crazy.
I mean, see, like even that, I would have tried to construct that in a different way, where like if the ladders were somehow in these positions and guys
Jeff just thrown out.
Yeah, no just hands. Laying on his back. He didn't care. If we'd been in these ladders, I would have tried to like maybe have two guys trying to like throw us through the guy on the table, but then we fight them off and then we turn and decide to jump, as opposed to just being up there with everybody else down. Just once again, try and highlight and the like point of this is to get these titles.
Yeah. Was that ladder still set up in the corner from your jump?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And see, like even Adam, you know, is bringing it over, and I know you guys are going to superplex him, but just like if you would have kept Devon, he could have just set it up underneath the title and tried to win while you have Devon occupied. You know, it's little things like that in this match that I walk back and go,
or if like, you know, Devon had climbed up there and I grabbed the ladder and pulled it backwards as he was on it while he was trying to grab it. And then, you know, Adam swung it around and we did something, you know, to that effect. Like,
now, not to excuse that, but also at the time, you have to keep in context, these fans were so thirsty for this stunt show, car crash style stuff. So, you know, maybe now in hindsight, you're like, yeah, the psychology wasn't there as much. But
well, I'll tell you what else is important for us is to not be just the guys that fall off things and have to hit each other with ladders to get reactions. We wanted to be able to do these types of matches and have people enjoy them and look forward to them. But then we were doing real, like, straight up wrestling matches, whether they're singles or tags. We're like, oh, I want to see these guys wrestle, but they're not falling off anything. Like, you want them to be engaged, entertained, even when you're in a regular match.
See, like this spot, I'm totally down for this. You have all four guys up at the top of the ladder trying to fight to get the titles, and we're underneath the titles where it's feasible you get them. And then we all bump off. Like, this is totally good. Yeah, that was very close to like my neck landing on the bottom rope and breaking it.
Now here's Bubba the Lone Man standing. And shit's about to get pretty crazy soon, as if it wasn't already. So it's going to be some pretty gnarly stuff.
I think so, yeah.
One involving you.
Do you remember when we went out? I talked about it earlier. Bruce Bridge said, look, I know you guys are doing a lot of crazy things. Don't rush. If you need to take extra time, take a few extra minutes, whatever. We're fine on time. We're good. If you need to take five extra minutes, that's fine. And just for someone to say that at WrestleMania is like unprecedented, especially in this day and age.
See, like psychologically, why would you guys be setting up that ladder there? That's not underneath the.
Well, in hindsight, what I would have done is stayed down until all these four guys were there, then dragged it over and climbed up. You know what I mean? Instead of doing it while another person just standing, my opponent's standing there right beside me. Like, well, I would
have done that. Here it goes. Watch this, guys. This is crazy.
You, Jeff, nailed that.
How'd that feel, Christian? You and Jeff just catapulted all the way to the outside there.
I don't know. It kind of became my specialty to go over the ropes all the way to the floor. I don't know. It's never been too difficult of a bump for me. So it was pretty good. It was pretty easy.
All guys down here, letting the crowd get up.
Standing O. We wanted to ride out the standing O as long as possible.
This is something good we did here. Just let everybody digest, get some shots of the car crash, the bodies.
We do remember. I remember we were like, Bubba, you got up a little too soon. I think we could have milked that a little longer.
Yeah, but also, like I said, this one being the first one of these.
Yeah, totally.
Triple threat ones. Totally. You know.
Richie wants to know.
We're also trying to position these guys as heels too, so I think that was the deal.
Richie wants to know, how did the veterans react to this match? Was it positive, or did they think some of this was unnecessary?
I mean, I think they realized what it was, and a lot of the comments were, better you guys than us. Like, they wouldn't want to do it,
right?
But for the most part, it was very, very positive stuff, and like they realized that the risks we were taking and how we were putting our bodies on the line, and they respected that what we were doing.
Yeah, that's what I would have said as well. That wraps it up.
Well, it's the Dudleys, so we need some wood. Here we go.
And this really was. This was our first introduction of tables, which I'm glad we waited on them to do it first.
I do remember when we started, when we were getting the reactions, that there were some people that didn't want to follow these matches.
So, yeah. I do remember that.
There was a lot of always like indecision as far as where we would be on the card because of matches that we're having to follow it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for you guys that you had to set the table for Terry and Kat to come after you. You know, it was.
We hope we made them proud. We hope we got the crowd primed and ready.
Val Venus was the special guest referee in that, so take something away from that there.
Is this setting up the bridge?
Yeah.
Tyler asks, do you feel like this match is often overlooked because of the TLC matches that followed?
No, I think it's, yeah. I think it is what it is. I think for my personal opinion is the one that we did the next year in Houston was the best.
Yes. Yeah. Same.
And
also TLC at SummerSlam was better than this too.
Yeah.
I think if anything, people talk about how great this match was as the first one, and not to like undersell us, but this, if anything, it's a little overrated.
Yeah,
if possible, you know, if that makes sense, just from a psychology standpoint, I think we could have done. Yeah,
it's also not a TLC match, so.
Yeah, it's not really a TLC match, right?
I mean, it is, but it isn't. It's like it was never billed as that. It was the triangle ladder match, so it's. But this was the kind of the what would it eventually be? Without this match, it wouldn't have turned into the TLC,
right?
Because it kind of gave us all our own thing, you know, the Dudleys at the tables, you guys at ladders, we had the chairs when we introduced the concerto, and just became that thing that Mick Foley coined when he was the GM. TLC, oh my.
Is this contraption here with the table on the ladder, is that a Michael Hayes suggestion by chance?
I think
that was us.
That was us.
All you guys.
That was us.
Yeah,
I remember saying that, and I do remember we had the people who gimmick tables. We had them reinforce that table on top, because we knew ultimately the finish was going to come down with me, him, and Adam on it, and you know I was going to get bumped off, and we just thought a regular table might fall. So this was also a different table.
Didn't you get to take a crazy power bump through a table on the floor in this?
I did. Yeah,
that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, it's happening very shortly.
There's a couple big table bumps through this match.
Yeah. Cut. And I remember whenever I was just like, I think I can do this. And I remember it was so unsteady because these ladders are ladder. Anybody who's ever climbed up a ladder knows how you feel if you start getting to the top.
Once they're getting pulled on and thrown and pushed, like they bend.
Yeah.
So they're not even a lot of times. When you get on it, there's like they're wobbling. And so you don't even know when you get to the top of it how stable it's going to be. It's kind of, you know, unnerving a little bit.
Joseph wants to know, at this point in time, as you're having this match, are you thinking – well, there's no way we can top that. Or is the goal, as Matt goes through a table there, is the goal to top this every time you go out?
Yeah, I think we just wanted to – I think we understood the match a little better after every time we did it.
Yeah.
So we didn't necessarily feel the need to beat it stunt-wise. We wanted it to just be a better match all around and make as much sense like psychology-wise. We wanted to start incorporating psychology into these matches, like I said, instead of just being car crashes and bumps for the sake of taking bumps and throwing ladders for the sake of throwing ladders. So that's what I think about it. I think
as time went on, we wanted to improve the quality of the match. Right. So if a viewer is watching it, not only are they like excited to see all the crazy spots that happen, but also excited for the characters in the match because they're emotionally invested in them. So I got to admit, too, I think as time went on, at the end, we tried to always incorporate bigger, like, holy shit moments, whatever it may be. You know,
a lot of the times what would happen is we would come in with ideas as far as structuring the match. And Jeff was that was never Jeff's bag, you know. Jeff was going to come up with the one stunt that was going to be the holy shit moment of the match. And he was like, that was his vision. And then our job was to, okay, how do we figure Jeff's spot in? How do we incorporate it and get it to the spot where it's going to be the most effective?
That's it.
Seeing the setup for that right now.
Like this was Jeff's thing that he wanted to do. So we tried to figure out here how to
best.
Well, and Matt, it's a nice callback to the Rumble 2000 match too, where, you know, Jeff did the big swanton through a table.
Yeah.
Now we're calling back to that only a few months later.
Yes.
We're going to see something similar here.
In one of the other matches, Jeff, we call it the Frogger spot, where Jeff like hopped from ladder to ladder, and he did it four or five times during the day or the night before and nailed it every time. But like we said, when you get out there and the ladders are a little bent, they're not quite the same as they were fresh.
Not quite as stable.
He hit one and it kind of wobbled. And I remember hearing him be mad at it. Like,
oh, God. Because he was so mad.
And he was very always in check with his emotions out there. It was very rare you ever heard any like emotion from Jeff as far as being mad or like you knew something wasn't right. Because he's pretty even tempered that way. But you could tell that pissed him off.
That's when he goes from the top of one ladder to the other where he like walks the top of the fan. That was the Mania 17. That was right before the spear spot because that was supposed to set that up. But I don't think anybody cared. It ended up
like to me this made sense here where I tried to cut him off.
And, oh, that was great. That, with Jeff the bell, Jeff just whipped you into the barricade.
And here we go. The stunt man.
I remember even thinking too, like, that's a little close.
Yeah.
For how tall the ladder was. I mean, it was either a 12 or 14 foot ladder. I'm not sure which one it is. But I do know after Jeff does this, when he hits him, it's a very soft swanton. Like, he ends up taking care of it. Like, Jeff didn't even think he broke the table at first. But the ball of his foot was out after this, and he had to get put back in place.
He had bruises on the back of his legs, from his ankles up to his knees on the back of his legs from slamming it on the concrete here.
You can see how hard he hit right there.
Well, it still is one of those great iconic WrestleMania camera shots.
Mm-hmm.
Head on the ground.
And it's one of those. You see that this moment right here replayed, and that's what it is. It's all about is capturing moments.
Yeah,
and this is one of those ones that you always see.
And that's one of those things we always worked hard to incorporate into a match for Jeff is just like a moment because he really is like being who he is and the way he's wired. He's a moment maker, you know. Stuff like this, stuff like the spear with Adam, whatever it may be, hanging on the rings when he kicked Devon down. You know, we're always looking for a moment, and Jeff would kind of give us that moment, and then it was the job of the architects of the match to kind of incorporate it.
So here we go, starting to get the gears turning towards the finish.
Yeah,
Devon going up. We know Devon hates heights, so I'm sure he didn't love.
Yeah, no, he's a trooper in these because he was terrified of heights.
Yeah,
like I said, day before with no crowd. It's hard to get him to go up any of these ladders. Like he was just terrified. But once the crowd was there, he got up there. You could hear him talking to himself, but he did it. You know?
Yeah. Gotta go. Gotta go. Yeah. Go. Yeah. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
He was.
Here we go.
Terrified of heights.
Dragging yourself up, Matt. You've talked about that on past episodes.
Yeah.
After you go through war, you try to drag yourself up that ladder.
Yeah. When you lose your legs, man.
And we talked about the before also with the ladders, like the ladder that on the side that I'm on, the one leg was really bent and it was basically on three legs here. And it was really wobbling. So I was like, in my head, I was like, I just see this thing tilting over and this finish getting completely messed up.
In my head, I just hear, he's there.
Yeah.
That table like disintegrated.
Yeah. And like, I couldn't stand up here because this was wobbling so bad. Like, I thought if I stood up, that we both would have gone ass over Tika. Yeah.
And you can see me. I start rolling. And I'm like, when I'm not sure if it's going to go, I was ready to roll my ass out of the ring.
And this is a big moment for us. Like,
we had
played this moment over in our heads since we were kids in my side yard, you know, talking that we were going to be tag team champions someday. And, like, this was the moment that we had dreamed about and talked about since we were kids. And to be able to share it with Adam on the top of this ladder was pretty awesome, pretty special. And obviously, you know, with these guys too, we had a really special moment backstage after, which we always did, made it a point to do after these matches, is just find a place where we could just be alone and reflect. And, you know, we're putting our lives in each other's hands. And there's a certain level of respect that goes with that.
And then once again, I just want to reiterate, that was totally the right call too. You guys winning this match was an absolute right call. That was a super great shot. That started back at No Mercy, the overhead cam, and became famous. For our crazy bumps.
They called the Wile E. Coyote cam.
They were. Yeah, it was the Wile E. Coyote cam.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Time to tell you about something I'm super passionate about, protecting your family. Yes, this is a life insurance ad for GoliathLife.com, but to me, this is really about peace of mind. Think about insurance for a second. We all get medical and auto insurance, yet we never even know if we're going to have a need for it. Let me let you in on a little secret. You need life insurance. We're all going to die. Now, as you let that reality sink in, think about what would happen if your family stopped having your income tomorrow. If you don't have a plan for that, you need to visit GoliathLife.com. And I mean right now. And just personally, I've lost two friends in their 40s this past year and a half, and I don't even want to think about what their families would be going through had they not had life insurance. If you don't have it, get it. Protect your family. And I suggest you go to GoliathLife.com because they've made the process of getting affordable life insurance super easy. Goliath Life streamlines the life insurance process by allowing you to get quotes from more than 20 carriers within minutes. And you'll pick your terms and payments to fit your budget. You pick your price, you start the online application immediately, and even schedule the medical exam to come to you. And I've done it. They sent someone to my office. I skipped the phone calls, the paperwork, and the crazy invasive conversations. Goliath Life makes buying life insurance simple. There's no hidden fees, no upsells, no hassle, hell, not even a phone call. Goliath Life is life insurance in your hands on your time. Get multiple quick quotes right now from the comfort of your own home and begin your application in a few easy clicks right now at GoliathLife.com.
Man, that was great. So watching it back, I mean, how do you feel about it all these years later?
Yeah, I mean, I still feel good about it. I said, it was kind of set the stage for what the match would ultimately become, which was the TLC match. And like I said, that was kind of like the springboard into these triple threat and multi-man type ladder matches. And you know, I'm happy with it. I think it holds up the test of time. And you can also see where we got better with these matches as far as piecing together and adding psychology, which is super important.
Agreed. I mean, I think for six guys who were making their WrestleMania debut in a match that had a ton of pressure on it, and we had to go out and like pull off some pretty important shit. And, you know, there was a whole lot of stunts. There was a whole lot of room for error and whatnot. I thought we killed it. I thought we did really good.
Yeah.
And we gave the crowd moments that they would remember for the rest of their life, you know, and it worked. Looking back, could it have been better? Yeah. But it was like our starting point, and it really set the foundation for the whole TLC moment.
Yeah. And I think we're so young and hungry too, that we realized the opportunity that was in front of us as far as making a statement.
Yes.
And like I said, I think all three teams, it was like, you know, we had lightning in a bottle when it was Edge and Christian and the Hardys. And then when the Dudleys came along, it just added that like dangerous element that our teams were lacking. You know, they were bigger, they were dangerous. Mm-hmm. They were like that, brought that tough kind of more street fight element to like our finesse, I guess, at the time.
Yeah.
And it just gelled and it worked. And I think we all were of the same mindset. Like, we wanted to put tag team wrestling back on the map. We wanted it to be an important part of the show. And we wanted it to be a springboard to launching all of our careers. Like, and Matt said this from the very first Edge and Christian versus the Hardy Boys ladder match. Matt said it best. He said, it took us from being WWE wrestlers to WWE superstars overnight. And we're on our way here.
You guys get 4 stars from the Observer for that one, Matt. Not 5, but 4. Still pretty good. It's the highest rated match of the night. It's considered by the readers the best match of the night. And it certainly got the biggest reactions of the night on what I said before. Not a very good WrestleMania, all things considered. I got one more question for you guys from our fans here. Again, hashtag Ask Matt. Brad wants to know, after doing a ladder match like this, your bodies obviously suffer. So now it's 2022. You're both still at it. What is your secret? This is a good way to help educate the younger generation of wrestlers who are out there, the Darby Allens, those types that are out there throwing their body everywhere. How do you keep your bodies healthy all these years later after a car crash like that?
I mean, part of it's luck. I mean, you know, but also part of it is like I said, you know, learning to do, not just doing it, just throwing it out there just to do it. So like I said, launching yourself off of the top rope and taking a straight back bump on the floor becomes like an arm drag. You don't want it to be that,
right?
Like you have to, now you have to go bigger than that to get reactions. You know, you want people to be invested in you as a wrestler, as a character, and not necessarily just because you're fling your body anywhere. So the The goal is to have people feel that connection with you. So when you do those things, when you pick your spot with those things, they mean more. You don't have to do them on a nightly basis where you're going to kill your body.
And I think these guys even had a head start on us because they were like officially trained at a wrestling school. Jeff and I, we're backyarders and shit, you know, like learning how to work smarter. As opposed to, you know, like you can work really hard, but you can also work smart. You don't need to be reckless and take like unnecessary chances and unnecessary bumps. And just as I've gotten older, speaking for myself, Jeff's still a stuntman. You know, I really pick and choose when I do things, and I just do a good job of taking care of myself. And as he said too, obviously luck is a huge factor in it because we're just lucky that we are as healthy as we are at this stage of the game with all the insane things we've done.
You know, there's a saying, "Motion is lotion." So like if you're you know, as long as you're taking care of your body, you're working out, you're trying to feed yourself properly, you know, that also goes a long way as far as longevity, you know. And I think that when, even though when I was retired for 7 years, I wasn't as strict. And obviously when I was getting ready to come back, you know, I really dialed it in, but I still like worked out and, you know, tried to eat as clean as possible, even if, you know, I was, you know, not, like I said, not quite as strict as I was when I was competing, but I think that's key. It's just trying to take care of your body.
I feel like if you live this lifestyle and you realize the damage you've done to your body by taking all these bumps, that becomes like a thing. Like I will always, you know, stretch and work out and do whatever just to take care of myself because I want to also optimize the state of my quality of life.
Yeah. It's crazy. I'm super weird with this kind of stuff, but like I never stretch and I had never stretched before matches. I'd go in cold. I never warm up. I never stretch. I just go. And that's just my thing. I don't know why. That's
awesome.
It's very weird.
You and Fit Finley?
Fit like that too?
Yeah. Fit would do that. When I was working with Fit there, we worked together for a long time. He'd sit down and say, "Oh, you good, Fit?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm good. I'm just stretching." That's what he did. And he's just sitting before he got from the match. "I'm good. I'm just stretching."
Man, that was so much fun to get a chance to watch that back with you, Christian. It's great to see you doing your thing. You and Adam Cole tore the house down just last week. It's really great. Did you ever envision that you and Matt Hardy would be working together all these years later, still in ring capacity?
No, I mean, I got to pinch myself sometimes, you know, but it's that getting this back is a gift for me. And after like it seemingly being gone for as long as it was. So I'm just trying to take everything in as much as I can now, knowing that like it's not going to last forever. I know that it was taken away once and at some point it's going to go again. So just got to enjoy the time that I do have. And it's just at this point, my only concern is putting on quality matches and enjoying myself and, you know, just giving back to the AEW fans that are so passionate and come out to support us every night. So
I got to say this too. I'm going to add it, you know, like whenever you did that and you showed up at the Royal Rumble and you came out with that, man, I was so happy. It's like one of the, like as a friend, one of my proudest moments.
Thanks, man.
So cool that, you know, that he has healed and he's healthy enough to go do this again, because like, once again, one of the most passionate guys, you know, that you'll ever meet. And one of the smartest guys, like his mind for like wrestling and just psychology and just the entire business is so underrated, and he never got the credit he deserves. So whenever he got that opportunity to come out Royal Rumble, it was such a great emotional moment. And then once he came to AEW, I was so happy because I knew he would kind of get to write his last chapter on his own and he would make it as good as possible.
Yeah. It's always like humbling when people come up and say, "Hey, you know, you're so underrated and this and that." And my response is, "I'd rather be underrated than overrated." So
that's a good response.
How valuable has he been to that locker room there, Matt?
Extremely valuable. I mean, you can tell, like, Papa Khan does a good job at putting guys who have had some street cred and been around for a while with younger guys, and like just him working with Jungle Boy has been massive for him and Luchasaurus, I think, you know. And I think those guys have learned, and they have also just grown so much during the time they spent with him.
Awesome stuff, man. We really appreciate, you know, Edge and Christian are so embedded in this story that is the career of the Hardy Boys.
Yeah, we're always going to be intertwined forever. You know, and it's
you will fight forever.
You can't talk about one without the other, you know? Yeah. So it's like, we'll probably be at an autograph signing somewhere when we're 75. And
I can't wait.
Start a angle or something.
And it's just so awesome because, like, you started out as friends, then you're feuding, then you're friends again, then you're feuding, and it goes on.
We can't figure it out.
It goes on and on for years, and we have many more TLC matches and big moments to cover here on the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy between you guys. So you have an open invite whenever you'd like to hop on and chat with us.
Thanks for asking.
Really happy again. Absolutely. Matt Hardy, anything else you'd like to add here? I always tell people, check out the House Hardy on Twitch. Rebby Hardy up to some good stuff. What else is cooking over there?
Just killing it. You know, we're going to work right now, AEW. Make sure to check out Dynamite every Wednesday. Make sure to check out Rampage every Friday. AEW is doing some really good things in 2022 and excited for it. And also, I just want to say too, Christian, people talk about how great of a shape he is in. He is in amazing and great shape. He, you got some workout gear coming out, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but yeah, we've got some cool things on the horizon.
All right, I want to do that. I want to give a plug for his thing. He's got some special stuff coming out. It's really cool.
Yeah,
very and nice.
It's very inspiring how great of a shape he's gotten himself into.
Very nice. Well, keep your eyes open for that. Awesome. Really, look at that shit. Damn.
You know what I mean?
All right. Well,
48. He's 48 and turned into a sex bot.
I've got a bottle of whiskey here that I'm just going to go take some sips of after this. And really appreciate you hopping on, man. And really appreciate all you guys as always listening to The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. Make sure you subscribe. Leave that 5-star review. And we got a fun one next week. At least it'll be fun for me to hear your perspective. Not a fun topic, but we're talking about when Jeff was let go in 2003 and Matt Hardy, for the first time in his career, is on his own having to reinvent. So I'm excited to take a peek inside that locked room that is your mind on that one, Matt Hardy.
That's when I developed a little attitude.
That's why it's going to be fun. We'll see you guys next week here on The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. Talk to you next time.